week, I will have Greg Pallas. He will be here to help us kick off our membership drive. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Woohoo! Well,
thanks.
Heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. It is 9 o'clock, and on your Thursday morning, we hope you'll stay with us for Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia in 1 hour from now at 10 with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints today, join us for workers protesting the hedge fund buyout of the American Apparel in Los Angeles. Also, the Flashpoints multi-part series, The Battle for Public Education in the 21st Century, continues, and more on rising opposition to testing in the U.S. public schools. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with Viet Thanh Nguyen about Sympathizer, his spy novel examining the legacy of Vietnam. And later in the hour, we'll hear a little poetry and a look at the new film Jimmy's Hall, about political activist Jimmy Gralton, who was deported from Ireland during the country's Red Scare of the 1930s. That's all coming up this morning, but up next, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. Stick around.
One, two, ready, go!
Tune in to KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to 5 stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, and interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays, we'll broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, we'll broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people's supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. And I am Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I want to give you those tools to destroy billionaire rule, to destroy the fascism, the Jim Crow fascism that now characterizes our society. First, a few headlines about creeping radioactivity with the revelation that that the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, with the cooperation of volunteers, has succeeded in its initial goal of monitoring the arrival of the first tendrils of Fukushima radiation on the west coast of the United States, something the U.S. government would do if it were a people's government rather than a shill for the billionaire oligopoly. With that comes the news that Fukushima is continuing to move into an advanced state of catastrophe. Yes, the spills are getting worse. The power goes off. The incredibly radioactive water comes rushing towards the ocean, and nothing can stop it. Quoting Professor Hiroaki Koide, who was a professor at Kyoto University Research Reactor Institute and is now retired, he said, "Although what I've been describing is quite grave, we have an even more serious issue facing us, which is the reactor cores melted in units 1 through 3. What are we going to do about that? TEPCO believes there are lumps of melted fuel, and they have this idea that they are somehow going to pluck out all of these lumps. They're saying that the first step they will take is to somehow plug the holes in the containment vessel. I believe this plan that has been presented is simply impossible to realize. We don't even have the technology or ability now to even determine where the holes are. And even if we were able to determine where the holes are, how can we possibly repair them? We do not have the means to do so. I think the fundamental assumption of TEPCO and the government that the melted fuel is sitting at the bottom in a nice little lump like a dumpling shape, I think that is impossible. It is an impossible proposition." Now, departing from what Koide said, and speaking for myself, I just want to back that up a little bit. There have been two attempts to use two brand new high-tech slithery robots to slither their way into the reactor jumble debris there in Fukushima. And everyone put a lot of hope into these robots. They had anti-radiation shielding. They were, as I mentioned, able to slither and to climb and to twist around. And boy, they were just something. And the first one that was sent in there got most of the way to where it was supposed to go and died of radiation. And so a second one was sent in, and it got much further, and it identified two or three aspects of the destruction inside the reactor, and it died of radiation. And the thing is, if you can't even get a probe in there all the way to find out where the lumps of corium are, and when you get close to the lumps of corium, your robot dies, I think you can look at that and say with pretty good confidence that we do not have the technology, even the latest, highest, best technology, can't get close to that much radiation. And much less people can. But I'm going to return to what Professor Koide said, because this isn't Japan's problem. This stuff is, as I was saying, just barely starting to come across the Pacific. We had a big pulse of iodine-131 that came across in April of 2011 and had its effect, and probably killed babies here. That's a statistical probability. The babies did die. They didn't pop up with a little flag saying Fukushima. That was very quick because it blew over in the air. But now we're just getting these first tendrils of radiation through the water, which has been soaking through all this time. And that's why it's so significant that the leakage from these giant nuclear power plants in Fukushima, Japan, is ongoing. They've been flooding the whole time, pouring radioactivity into the sea, and it's slowly spreading this way. It is affecting your life, and I'll have more details on that in a minute. It is spreading to tuna, and what I've discovered is that I've been borne out, that my suspicion that migratory tuna would be the first to show radiation, and I have been finding this. I've been going to sushi restaurants for years now, checking the tuna, and yes, the tuna is getting more radioactive. But returning to the text here, he says that although this picture from TEPCO looks like a neat little situation where all of the spent fuel is put nicely into two little lumps, I think in reality that one considers all of the explosions and shaking and damage that occurred, I cannot imagine that every bit of that melted fuel will be sitting nicely in one little lump, but rather it will have spread all over the place. And it's also possible that not only would they spread horizontally, It could be that some of the fuel could actually have gone through the floor of the containment vessel as well. What I've just described, he says, is general public. What I've just described is very logical for anyone who understands nuclear engineering or nuclear energy, and in recent months has come to the understanding of the general public. In fact, this is a copy of a local Fukushima newspaper, he says, which printed an article about what I just described. Instead of the government and TEPCO's description of the fuel being in one nice dumpling shape, it shows that they're probably spread all over the place. In fact, this is the result of some announcements by even some government-sanctioned experts. There's no way that they will be able to get all of it. I believe that fundamentally the idea to somehow remove the melted fuel is simply impossible to realize. And I'm reminding you whose words these are. They come from Professor Hiroaki Koide of the Kyoto University Research Reactor Institute. He writes, "The only way we can eventually deal with this accident is to do what was done at Chernobyl, which is to create a concrete coffin or sarcophagus for the facility, like the spent fuel pool." Say that three times quickly. Like the spent fuel pool at Unit 4. Units 1 through 3 have pools that are filled with spent fuels and must be removed. Likewise, we cannot even think about building a concrete coffin. How long will it take for the spent fuel rods to be removed to a slightly less dangerous place? We have no idea. I think TEPCO and the Japanese government do not know how long this procedure will take. How many years from now will that sarcophagus be done? I cannot even begin to make a prediction. In fact, I will not be alive when the project starts. Although the Chernobyl accident was a terrible accident, it involved only one reactor. With Fukushima, we have a minimum of three reactors that are emitting dangerous radiation. The work involved to deal with this accident will take tens of years, hundreds of years. And also from E&E News, an interview with Chris Harris, the former licensed senior reactor operator and engineer. He was asked the question, "Do you agree that this is," referring to Fukushima, "do you agree that this is essentially, if it runs the next 20 years without anything happening, basically an extinction event for a good part of the human race and higher life forms?" And Chris Harris, former licensed senior reactor operator and engineer, quotes, "I just jotted down some thoughts really quickly. These are the myths of Fukushima. Containment? There isn't any, even though today they started off probably another failed attempt at the ice walls. Cold shutdown? Is a myth at Fukushima. They declared it, but there is no cold shutdown there. Cooling is a myth there, because you can't tell that there's actual cooling going to where the fuel is, wherever the fuel is. Waste processing is a myth. Mountains of plastic bags, a mountain of them. That's waste processing? Decommissioning is a myth. Cleanup is a myth. It's a waste generation facility. There is no containment. Emergency planning there is also a myth, as we have seen, because of the faulty electrical systems and everything else from the makeshift system they have running." So, says Chris Harris, former licensed senior reactor operator, "I am in agreement with your statement that this is an extinction event." There's more. "Smoke from the burning forests in the Chernobyl exclusion zone is capable of spreading contaminants across great distances, even after the fire has been stopped." That's according to Russia Today. The forest fire near the crippled Chernobyl nuclear power plant started this Tuesday and triggered an emergency alert, with police and National Guard mobilized to bring the flames under control. And departing from that text, these trees are chock full of cesium and strontium. And they are, of course, through their flames, blasting these radioactive elements that have been contained within their wood into the air. God knows where it will flow to, and it will not respect international borders. But returning to the text, by Wednesday, the country's emergency ministry, as well as the prime minister who went to the affected area, saw the spread of the fire has been stopped, and firefighters were containing the remaining flames. Later on Wednesday, Ukrainian TV reported the flames in areas containing radioactive waste have been put out. New hotspots were discovered, but they are outside the exclusion zone. The fire occurred within 30 kilometers of the Chernobyl nuclear plant, outside the exclusion zone, which was abandoned and cordoned off almost 30 years ago in 1986. An explosion and fire in Chernobyl's reactor 4 caused a release of radioactive particles into the air back then, which contaminated the surrounding area and caused an increase in radiation levels in Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and across Europe. It was the worst ever nuclear disaster in terms of casualties and cleanup costs at that time. The crippled reactor itself was sealed under a sarcophagus of reinforced concrete, and speaking for myself, and that required an army of people, all of whom sacrificed some part of their lives to radiation damage. Continuing with the radiation situation, bluefin tuna have been tested in California waters. 15 of them were tested. All of them were contaminated. This from Washington's blog. Low levels of radioactive cesium from Japan's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear accident have begun to turn up in the fish caught off California. Fish caught off of California in 2011. The bluefin spawn off Japan, and many migrate across the Pacific Ocean. The tissue samples taken from the 15 bluefin caught in August, 5 months after the meltdowns, all contained reactor byproducts, cesium-134 and 137, at levels that produce radiation about 3% higher than the natural background sources. So, departing from this and speaking for myself, as I was saying, this situation continues and is worsening. And the water that was hoped to be kept in the vicinity of the Fukushima nuclear power plant compound has been washing down, and increasingly so, so that there is an ongoing ocean contamination disaster spreading along the prevailing waters and winds from Japan to the west coast of the United States. That's here. Returning to the article, the bad news is that it is only going to get worse. Unlike some other compounds, radioactive cesium does not quickly sink to the sea bottom, but remains dispersed in the water column from the surface to the ocean floor. Fish can swim right through it, ingesting it through their gills by taking in seawater or by eating organisms that have already taken it in. Neither of the scientists who tested the fish thought they were likely to find cesium at all. And since the fish tested were born about a year before the disaster, this year's fish are going to be really interesting. There are fish born around the time of the accident, and these are the ones showing up in California, he said, and that's back in 2011. Pardon me. These have been, for the most part, swimming around those contaminated waters their whole lives. In other words, the 15 fish tested were only exposed to radiation for a short time, but bluefin arriving in California now will have been exposed to the Fukushima radiation for much longer. And moving back to the present, of course, now it's much worse. So when I am at a sushi restaurant, I generally speaking don't eat the tuna, but I do take the tuna off now and then, and I apply my Geiger counter to it, and yes, it's hotter than the other fish. And as I've said many times before, ingesting radiation is much more dangerous than simply passing by it. So keep that in mind. Now I want to talk about current events as the United States population begins to show in various ways their dissent against being ruled like dogs by the fascist elites. This from MotherJones.com. After Baltimore police and a crowd of teens clashed near the Mandawin Mall in northwest Baltimore on Monday afternoon, news reports described the violence as a riot triggered by kids who had been itching for a fight all day. But in interviews with Mother Jones and other media outlets, teachers and parents maintained that police actions inflamed a tense but stable situation. Megan Harris, a teacher at a nearby school, described on Facebook what happened. When school was let out that afternoon, people were in the area equipped with riot gear. According to eyewitnesses in the Mandalman neighborhood, the police were stopping buses and forcing riders, including many students who were trying to get home, and speaking for myself, they have to take those buses to get home. They don't have school buses. Trying to make the students disembark. Cops shut down the local subway shop. They also blockaded roads near the Mandalman Mall and Frederick Douglass High School, which is across the street from the mall, and essentially corralled young people in the area. That is, they did not allow the after-school crowd to disperse. Police were forcing buses to stop and unload all their passengers. Then Frederick Douglass High School students in huge herds were trying to leave on various buses but couldn't catch any because the buses were all shut down. No kids were yet around except about 20 who looked like they were waiting for police to do something. The cops, on the other hand, were in riot full gear, marching towards any small clique of students. It looked as if there were hundreds of cops. The kids were standing around in groups of 3 to 4. Harris wrote in a Facebook message to Mother Jones, they weren't doing anything, no rock throwing, nothing. The cops started marching toward the groups of kids who were just milling about. And that's where I depart from this and say, I watched some helicopter footage, and maybe you watched part of the helicopter footage. If you watched part of it, then you saw those kids throwing rocks at cops who retreated somewhat and then charged. If you watched all of the helicopter footage, what you saw was cops throwing rocks at kids who were doing nothing. Cops throwing rocks and objects at kids who were, as I was mentioning, corralled. They were deliberately provoking and injuring kids. These being kids, they eventually began to defend themselves and throw rocks and things at cops. That's the part you got to see. And then it was on. This was set up. This is what you call let it happen on purpose, false flag event. A parent who picked up his children, returning to the text here, parent who picked up his children said the kids stood across from the police and looked like they were asking them, why can't we get on the buses? But the police were just gazing. The majority of those kids aren't from around that neighborhood. They need those buses and trains in order to get home. He continued, if they would have let them children go home yesterday, wouldn't even have turned out like that. Meg Gibson, another Baltimore teacher, described a similar scene to Gawker. Quote, the riot police were already at the bus stop on the other side of the mall, turning buses that transport the students away, not allowing students to board. They were waiting for the kids. Kids were set up. They were treated like criminals before the first brick was thrown. With police unloading buses and with a nearby metro station shut down, there were a few ways for students to clear out. Several eyewitnesses in the area that afternoon say that police seemed to arrive at the Mondawmin anticipating mobs and violence prior to any looting. At 3:01 p.m., Baltimore Police Department posted on its Facebook page, there is a group of juveniles in the area of Mondawmin Mall. Expect traffic delays in the area. But many of the kids, according to the eyewitnesses, were stuck there because of police actions. The Baltimore Police Department did not respond to calls for comment, but I'm asking you for calls for comment. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and you can talk to me on Press Watch. I am KBOO Portland. I am Teresa Mitchell. Time is 9:21. Around 3:30, the police reported that juveniles had begun to throw bottles and rocks. 15 minutes later, the police department noted that one of its officers had been injured. After that, the violence escalated, and rioters started looting the Mondawmin Mall, and Baltimore was in for a long night of trouble and violence. But as the event is reviewed and investigated, an important question warrants attention. What might have happened had the police not prevented students from leaving the area? Did the department's own actions increase the chances of conflict? And speaking for myself and answering that question from the helicopter footage, I would say, hell yeah. And this is the cop's idea. And returning to the article, as Megan Harris put it, if I were a Douglas student that just got trapped in the middle of a minefield by cops without any way to get home and completely in harm's way, I'd be ready to pop off too, end quote. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'd like to mention something about human rights. We live in this society. It is a wealthy society. It is the wealthiest, and that wealth is extremely and criminally poorly distributed. We need to cease pooling all of our wealth into the hands of an hereditary class of oligarchs, of new kings that we call billionaires, because it causes all of these problems. And we need to have a minimum income, not just a minimum wage, but a minimum income that is adequate. And there is plenty of money for that. All the people who say, oh, there's a deficit, we don't have enough. You look at the big picture, oh yeah, the trillions are there. Sure, they get sent to offshore islands in Switzerland. But the mighty, mighty U.S. military can do something about that. That money is held away from you and I, from the working class. And we're told all of the excuses. We're told the myth that somehow you and I might somehow get our hands on those billions if we are virtuous enough, but virtue has nothing to do with it. especially when you consider 70% of the super rich have inherited that money. No, this is just the formation of a class, a super class, an oligarchy that, and it's the sort of thing that happens when people are afraid to talk about distribution of wealth. I suppose that one reason that people are afraid to talk about redistribution of wealth is because of the defeat of the so-called socialist countries, actually totalitarian countries, but nonetheless, they represented distribution of wealth, even if they didn't do it very well. Talk about Soviet Union. And the demonization of the word communism, socialism. I reject that, by the way. My political attitude is anarcho-socialist. So that, with all this wealth, with all the many, many trillions, I don't know if it's 13 trillion or 31 trillion or whatever it is, but it's plenty of money to fix things here in the United States and turn around just about everything. It's the maldistribution that causes these problems. And we need to think about that. And I'm glad that Occupy happened, because it cracked open that door to make people realize that there is a maldistribution of wealth. It cracked open the door to class analysis so that people could realize there are people like the Walmart heirs who receive billions upon billions upon billions for doing nothing. And all of that money, whether it's in their hands or the hands of the Koch brothers or the Wall Street gamblers, makes things worse and worse, because it's in the hands of sociopaths. Of course, if they were not sociopaths, then they would be in favor of redistributing the wealth to a logical level. And so in those lines, there's an article by David Moberg in ITT talking about the $15 minimum wage, a hand-lettered placard reading, "McDonald's, stop fooling around. $15 in a union caught the spirit of the crowd of at least 3,000 protesters in Chicago for a march to McDonald's restaurant in downtown Loop area, connected to the Chicago Board of Trade, and 236 cities in the U.S. and 100 more around the world, from Sao Paulo to New Zealand and from Glasgow to Tokyo. According to protest spokespeople, fast food and other low-wage workers joined together to pressure employers like McDonald's to raise their workers' pay. Organizers claimed that it was the largest protest by low-wage workers in U.S. history, and it may well rank as one of the broadest global worker protests ever taken against multinational corporations, one reinforced by recent investigations and lawsuits in Europe against the companies for violations of labor, health, safety, tax, and other laws. With its intense public relations campaign, the campaign amplifies the actions of fast food workers, some of whom walk off their assigned shifts, as in a traditional strike. For brand-sensitive consumer product companies, many organizers believe such bad publicity can cost companies greatly and potentially open up new organizing possibilities." Now, here in Oregon, this is just my thoughts, here in Oregon, we have an effort to put $15 minimum wage on the ballot. And personally, I think it's an excellent idea, and I'd like to know what you think about it. The number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. If wages had kept up with productivity, if wages had kept up with measured productivity here in the United States, the minimum wage would be $21 an hour. $21 an hour, possibly enough to live on. But here in Oregon, it's less than $10 an hour. And as everyone knows, if you're getting paid $10 an hour, then you're being subsidized by the state if you have any kids at all. And maybe even if you don't, I'll have to ask y'all about that. But $10 a month, $10 a week, excuse me, $10 an hour isn't very much money. Now, is it? It just doesn't cover everything, and so there are things that you do without. So I'm interested in your story. How are you getting by on a minimum wage, and do you support $15 an hour? I think it would be very healthy for the economy. And Linda's on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My point of view is that unless the system fundamentally changes, $15 an hour is, as a minimum wage, is going to be the new poverty level. because the fat cats still want to make their same profits, and so everything is going to cost more, and there's just going to be inflation. And $15 an hour will be dirt poor.
How long do you think it would take to get to that point?
Pardon?
How long do you think it would take to get to that point?
I think it would get there very rapidly.
Why do you think that? Because that has not been the effect when minimum wage has been raised before.
Minimum wage is always the new poor.
No, it's not.
It always is the new poverty level. And what makes sense to me is Richard Wolff, who says that fundamentally the system has to change, and if we had worker-owned businesses, they would make decisions that would not give all of the money to the person at the top. They would make decisions, the workers would make decisions together that didn't put our environment at risk and our children at risk.
Now, that's interesting what you say there.
Redistribute wealth. How are you going to redistribute wealth? I mean, do you just give everybody a blanket check? I think worker-owned businesses makes a lot of sense.
I do, too. And I think that with $15 an hour, what will happen with a lot of smaller businesses is that they will have to become essentially worker-owned businesses because, let me give you an example. Let's say you open an ice cream shop. This is pretty close to exactly what happens. Okay. You open an ice cream shop. You've got a little money. You're the capitalist. And you get in there and you work your butt off because you know that it's got to be open 8-10 hours a day. Otherwise, it's not going to take off. So you're there. You're moving as fast as you can. You're serving customers. You're getting out that ice cream day after day after day after day. Month after month. At some point, you say, okay, now I've got this started. I'm going to get an employee. So what are you going to pay the employee? You can't pay the employee $15 an hour.
Right.
Unless you're willing to take a very sharply reduced profit. But
Correct. You
can keep doing the work yourself. Because if you keep doing the work yourself, eventually you're going to get to the point where there is more work than you can do. And then you can pay $15 an hour now. And when you do, you will not get the level of profit as an ice cream shop owner who hires at minimum wage or close to it. And that ice cream shop owner will tell you that you are a fool. But I don't care. $15 an hour is a basis, and I'm not willing to go below that.
But big corporations, I mean, Walmart will just raise their prices because they're still going to get their trillions of dollars.
Walmart has to obey the rules of the market, which are supply and demand. And there will be a great deal more demand for their products. And if they can supply it, then they can offer a higher price. But what's really going to happen is wealth is going to be distributed from Walmart's excessive profits into the hands of the workers, back into the hands of the community that they have been raiding for so long. The blood that they've been sucking out will stay in the body of the workers, and the local areas will begin to show some prosperity.
But I hope you're right, but I just see $15 as then the new poverty level.
Well, it would be the basis. It would be the least that someone was getting, I should hope, and it would cause other people to say, hey, I'm not getting $15 an hour. And so, yeah, from that perspective, that would be the floor. But, I'm old enough to have been around when the minimum wage was raised. And, boy, did things get better. Not everyone just jacked up their prices all of a sudden. No, I was able to pay my rent and buy a bicycle. And that was, I'm thinking of 1978 in Texas. They raised it to $3.35 an hour. Oh, boy, I was living.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Thanks very much for your call. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Lynn is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
So, nice job within 15 an hour. The one argument you didn't bring up with her was that she was selling. She was saying, well, it's not perfect, so the hell with it, which, you know, that's pretty unrealistic critique, I think. But the main reason I called is when you were talking about Fukushima.
Yes.
You talked about your little test going into the sushi restaurant.
Yes.
I really, really hope that the way you did that was you took your Geiger counter and stuck it, you know, at the counter where they have the different items, and probably got thrown out. I hope you didn't actually spend money at a sushi restaurant.
Oh, yeah, I spent money.
Really? because those things are killing the ocean like crazy. And don't worry, the tuna are all going to be dead from being fished out from sushi restaurants long before they're going to die from radiation.
Well, there's a lot going on in the ocean. Overfishing is certainly a thing that's happening. And there are die-offs also from the acidification of the ocean, which is also due to industrialization out of our control. And, you know, my attitude is time that we put that under our control. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for your comment. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Been talking down capitalism in a couple of ways. One of them in the general aspect that we all experience here in this Jim Crow incarceration state, the denial of persons of color of access to our broken system, the mass incarceration, the harassment and murder by police, the mass murder by police, the ongoing, let's look at the big picture, genocide of black men. Yeah, I want to talk about that. And also talking about how capitalism allows TEPCO to keep going instead of being in jail and out of the picture so that the UN can take care and come up with a massive, massive project to stop the contamination of the entire Pacific Ocean. We say, oh, no, they're capitalists over there. They're TEPCO and, you know, they're geniuses and we love them. And so we'll leave them alone as slowly they kill and kill and kill with radioactive contamination, which, as I mentioned, is now arriving thanks to volunteers, not thanks to our government, which is in collusion with the oligarchies. Thanks to Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and to volunteers, including a KBOO volunteer, by the way, with buckets. We know that the contamination is starting to arrive. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Dennis is on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering what you think about the recent announcement that Bernie Sanders, that he's running for the presidency, and what chances you think he has. Thank you very much. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Chances. I guess I'll go backwards. Chance of Bernie winning, pretty slow. Pretty low. Reason being, I can't see him being all of the qualities that it takes, most of them negative, to suck up to the billionaires, to get the money, to not be drowned out by the Republicans and Democratic ads, to be drowned out even before the nomination. I see that the Democratic leadership very much wants to have Hillary. Doesn't mean that he shouldn't be supported. I very much support Bernie's ideas about, well, redistribution of wealth, about treating workers fairly. He's excellent when it comes to that. When it comes to imperial war, he supports this ongoing viciousness in Ukraine, which I have been going on the air and talking about, and I'm very conscious, pardon me for going back and back into this conversation to explain what I'm going to say, but most people simply do not realize what's going on in Ukraine, and that's very deliberate. The BBC, NPR, New York Times, all the major news agencies in the West have been very much downplaying the nature of the rump movement that the U.S. is very much promoting as the legitimate government of Ukraine. In Kyiv, you simply have a government that is in thrall to the billionaires, including U.S. billionaires, and which has made very heavy use of the Azov Battalion, Svoboda, and Right Sector. And all of those are, and I say this in a sense, and I dare you to sue me for saying this, all of these people are dedicated Nazi Party members. And when I say Nazi, I don't mean that they have terrible morals, which they certainly do. I mean, they believe all that crap, and they have little swastikas and other little insignias, and they believe in the supremacy of the white race. And they also believe that the races around them, they imagine that there's races and that there's subdivisions within those races that they can note, aren't white enough. And they're torturing and burning people to death, enjoying gleefully the sadism of it, because they believe that is the best way to go to create a new white homeland So the U.S. is supporting Ukraine. U.S. is supporting Nazis. And Bernie Sanders is supporting Nazis. So I can't get too excited about him for that. Now maybe you'll turn around and say I was wrong. Let's yank all the money out from those Nazis and let's jail their supporters here in the U.S. We have supporters for those Nazis right here in Portland. And they are violating the Boland Amendment and they belong in jail. So that's why you can see I get a little worked up. That's why I think about Bernie Sanders. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Betsy's on the air.
Hey, Teresa.
Hey.
Hi. I just happened to be listening in the car, and here you are. And I just wanted to bring up the something that has actually did show up in the Oregonian, a little blip yesterday. Haven't seen it in some of the national major media, but about the forest fires that are raging around the Chernobyl plant.
Yep.
And I have been working for the last 10 years with a nonprofit that works with downwinders, actually, in a nonprofit in Russia. And the horror that those people are experiencing, I mean, there's a lot of horror going on in Russia right now in general, but the absolute shock and terror of that, oh, this is Chernobyl again because of the radioactivity that's being released as the fires burn contaminated forest, is obviously something that we're not paying much attention to and that the major media are not talking about. And so that's the one really beautiful spot that I would kind of contribute in relation to that is that this small nonprofit in Bryansk, who's working with the Chernobyl downwinders and has been for the last 29 years, they also are working with the people around Fukushima. And they've done beautiful programs, Children of Chernobyl supporting children of Fukushima. And somehow there is still, in the face of all of this, there is this beautiful grassroots global solidarity that, no matter how much the machine tries to crush and how much the machine succeeds at crushing, there is still these little tiny beautiful sprigs of life that spring up between the cracks in the concrete. And just want to also notice those.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. Well, thanks very much for your call.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Teresa.
Number to call, 503-231-8187. I have propositions to discuss with you, propositions such as, what are we going to do to shut down the capitalists who hold the derivatives over our head, which are going to crash, by the way, who hold Fukushima over our head, who drain away our lives by forcing us to work for wages that are so low, and this is even true for adjunct professors, so don't talk to me about meritocracy and getting a better job and blah, blah, blah. The working population in the United States has been beaten down so far that so many of us are on food stamps as we work full time. That is absolutely unjust. That is humiliation and degradation, and it should make every worker furious. Furious for yourself, furious for everyone you love, furious for your grandkids. We should not allow the super rich to treat us like this. And $15 an hour, $15 our fight, I say, just to throw it in the face and throw it in the face of our oppressors. And their lackeys, the people who make a little bit more money and who think that they're going to be able to keep making that money, who don't realize that all they have to do is break their leg or conk their head at the wrong time and they'll go right down the toilet with us. Yeah, we're going to have to fight. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Steve's on the air.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Have they figured out what happened to Joseph Kent yet?
Joseph what?
Joseph Kent, K-E-N-T.
Tell me about it.
He's a one of the young people of color organizers down in Baltimore. He's been an active organizer in police brutality things for a couple of years now, and they disappeared him last night.
I think video. I know what you're talking about. He was grabbed off the streets.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so latest that I know, that I remember from him, is that he appeared in a large holding cell. And let me see what I can find here. Here's something from CBS News. It's more recent than the stuff from Huffington Post, which merely mentions that he was grabbed away. This the sort of snatching, by the way, is a PSYOPs technique. Did you know about this? Random snatching, also beating of especially small women during a demonstration is a PSYOPs technique. It's intended to get the crowd out of control and to terrify people, to make you feel that maybe you could just be going and doing an ordinary, peaceful, protest, and that you might be snatched away. It's something to increase fear. But anyway, reading from CBSNews.com, Kent, 21-year-old, a well-known civil rights organizer in Baltimore, was trying to defuse tensions between police and police protesting the death of Freddie Gray before an armored truck pulled up and a team of National Guard troops rushed him. "I just disappeared," Kent said of the arrest. "It happened so quickly." And skipping ahead, his message does not change despite his arrest. He says, "Don't use it as an excuse to have a riot." And trying to skip ahead and find out what has happened to him. Okay, I guess I'll stick with the latest information that I have, is that I believe that he is in custody and he is in a holding cell. So we've identified where he's at least.
Well, at least he's still alive. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling in. Yeah, police will do that. And if you see it happening, I think probably the best counter technique is to train in advance so that when you see that happening, you can grab someone like that away from the police. And then what you have to do, of course, is form a phalanx against the police while that person is, well, pretty much pushed, shoved, and dragged as far away from the scene as possible so the police can't find exactly the person they were looking for. And that's called, I've called that an extraction, but there's another word for it, rescue or something like that. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Been talking about our right to work for a living wage, the right of people. We should have a minimum level of income in this rich country. We can afford it, crunch the numbers, and it's there. Of course, the conservatives will tell you, crunch the numbers, and it's just not there, but they crunch their numbers. When I crunch the numbers, I take those trillions offshore that are offshore to dodge taxes, and I say, confiscate all of it. Yarr! Lower the boom. Avast the whatever. You know, mop the mizzen sail. And that, when I do that, gee, it all seems to pencil out just fine, because it seems to me if someone's criminal enough to take trillions of dollars that really should have been going to the workers who created it and hide it away just so it can't even have part of it taken to, given to the country that, you know, rather vigorously, I would say, defends the right of these super capitalists to have that wealth, well, they don't deserve any of it, and we should snatch it all away, all of it. And when you do that, you find out that, by golly, we could be wealthy indeed and paying war reparations to the entire world. Let's do it. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Sam's on the air. Hi, Sam. Cable to Sam, Earth to Sam. Come in, Sam. Okay, well, maybe Sam will call back. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. The ranks of the April 15th rally expanded with the participation of workers from many industries beyond fast foods, such as home care and daycare workers, student and college campus workers, airport workers, and many more. Many of them existing are potential SEIU members, talking about the McDonald's strike. Raising the minimum to $15 an hour would help nearly all of them, but conditions for workers in many of these low-wage industries are also worsened by management practices, such as employing many part-time workers, some of whom have erratic schedules and income. And once again, speaking for myself, and that also is where the food stamps come in. And it's a very extractive model because, you know, people come in here, they work for Walmart, they don't make enough to live on. The state of Oregon, that's your taxes, comes in and makes up the difference. Walmart gets the productivity. Do you see where I'm going with this? Walmart gets free taxes. Walmart gets free money. You don't even get that money. You get it in the form of humiliation and food stamps. And so Walmart is able to have a workforce that they don't have to pay fully for. and which they can simply mooch off Uncle Sam with. It's disgusting, but it works. It's been their business model for many a year, and you can see that the billions just keep rolling in as they suck the life out of one worker after another, as they suck the wealth out of one community out of after another, from everything from subsidized health care to food stamps, all of which needs to be provided because Walmart is so irresponsible, so greedy, so vile, that they suck the life out of communities to make a living. I will not set foot in a Walmart. If I do set foot in a Walmart, you better believe I'm up to something. I wouldn't even blame them if they know that. If they know me, security guards at Walmart, seeing me come in, would probably move me right back out, and I'd just have to say, you got me, guys. I was up to something, I admit it. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and we'll try again to talk to Sam.
Hey, Teresa.
Hey, Sam.
I'm back.
I'm glad you're back. What's up?
So I called Maria Cantwell to ask her to oppose the TPP.
Uh-huh.
And I got this response yesterday.
Okay.
It was so pathetic. It was like listening to a dog vomit and then eat the vomit.
Uh-huh.
She regurgitated all of these facts about how good the trade overseas with Japan is with the Northwest and how much our farmers depend on the markets and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, and how about it? And it's all about jobs. Gosh, they're all so concerned about jobs, and you'll get a job and job this and job that, and they're lying, but go ahead.
All she did was telegraph to me that she's already decided to approve that and give our resident the authority to negotiate trade agreements for the next 4 years, and we can kiss our ass goodbye. Frankly, there'll never be a $15 an hour minimum wage. There'll never be any environmental controls if they get their fingers in that. It'll be the corporatocracy, and we're done.
I can't kiss my ass goodbye because I've gotten too old and stiff, so I guess I'll just have to resist this sort of thing.
Okay. Maybe you can get a friend.
Yeah. No, I think I'll just stick with revolution. Hey, thanks very much for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, there are several things that you can do to start moving towards revolution right away. One is this rally that I'm going to tell you about. Another is for you to resist the idea that this wrecking of the economy is your fault. Have you noticed how it works with the it works the same way in oligarchic control? When you have a problem, they'll tell you that it's your fault and that you need to do something about it. For example, there's tremendous global warming, and the water is drying up in various places. Well, in all those places, you'll find that it is the commercial users of the water that are destroying the remaining stocks. But they will tell people like you and me to flush less often. They won't shut down their operations that take the majority of the water. And industrial operations, huge agricultural operations for things that are exported, like almonds. And likewise with the economy, they'll tell you, oh, it's your fault. You're just not good enough. If you had it together like, the Koch brothers, then you'd be billionaires. Well, this isn't true. It isn't even close to true. That implies social mobility. There's social mobility to a great extent in Denmark, but measuring with the same indices here, this is a desert for social mobility. You can't get there from here. This is America, the land of no opportunity. Boy, is it. And, I think I'll take another call. Steven's on the air.
Hi, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Yeah, hey, thanks for mentioning the Fukushima. It certainly is not being mentioned on any, commercial media. And, it is a valuable importance to realize what's happening there.
I'm glad I have a little time to talk about it, because when it comes to eating tuna, if you've been eating tuna up to now, you're probably still okay. You're probably all right. But it's going to get thicker, and there's a thing called Chernobyl heart, the weakening of the heart, and that is going to happen to you if you continue to eat this tuna as it becomes more radioactive. That's my message. But go ahead.
Yeah, and, well, of course, we have Hanford, you know, in our backyard that's leaking into the Columbia, but yet that also is not being discussed or mentioned.
Yes.
And, you know, we need to classify that waste or do something and realize the impediment we're leaving for future generations. You know,
yes,
we hold the world in trust, the earth in trust. It's the commons, you know, as we should be calling it, and yet, you know, we allow corporations to despoil and, you know, with the fracking and the other things that, and it's interesting how people talk about, oh, the world's going to end. Well, you know, the physical earth is not going to end. It will, you know, Mother Earth will go through her, keep on spinning until there's, you know, a meteor, incident, you know, asteroid, involvement or the sun, you know, goes supernova. But the issue is the habitability for us, you know, soft tissued living beings like humans and, you know, other animals and plants. And that's what's, I think, being lost in the equation here. And people need to focus on that. And it's time to, you know, get off of the barge that's sinking, the fossil fuel, you know, sucking society that we still live in, and, you know, shift while we still can onto the renewable resource barge, of course, and, you know, make that our life ship on Mother Earth here. And that, you know, will solve a lot of our problems, and you know, Germany's starting to do that with their photovoltaics, you know, the renewabilities there, and at least we have hydro here, although there's issues with that, of course. But
well, we have other alternatives to simply continue to blast out this cheap oil, which has been brought by fracking, which is so messy that it creates methane plumes that can be detected by satellites. Yeah, we don't have to do that. The Koch brothers would like to force you to do that. They would like to force a tax, for example, onto solar panels. That's how vicious they are. Just moving forward to destroy the earth. It really is. The billionaire class is doing it, and that's who we have to stop. Hey, thanks for calling in. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I want to tell you that there is a rally, May Day 15, and a Solidarity Rally and Feeder March, involving the Portland State University Student Union. Students will one day be the labor force, and Don't Shoot PDX, getting together. This is a movement, they write, being developed, which bridges the generational gaps and can really make a long-term difference for Portlanders. Reed College Blue Heron Collective is saying, May Day is an opportunity for us to celebrate and honor the histories of a struggle against violent structures of exploitation and displacement waged by workers, students, tenants, and prisoners, and to rise up in solidarity with people all around the world. This is all happening tomorrow, Friday. One of them is the student march at 2 to 3 p.m. in the PSU Park Blocks. Let's see. What else can I find? Rally at 2 p.m. South Park Blocks. Okay, so there's two of the rallies are going to be there. That's downtown Portland, if you're wondering. If you don't know where it is, just ask around or just listen for the noise. 2 to 3, and then march at 4:30 p.m. from the South Park Blocks. And this is in solidarity with Don't Shoot Portland, as it very much should be. This is all of a piece. Keeping a reserve labor force of the utterly desperate and disenfranchised, i.e. black men, is very much important to keeping wages low, to keeping that $15 an hour away from us. That's how it's done. We cannot accept these artificial divisions between the working classes any longer. And I would say, if you were, pardon me, if you're a white worker like me, you need to understand that the black worker's house is on fire right now, and it is time to take directions from them to, from black workers, to see how this rally is going to go down. And that sometimes that comes down to particulars. For example, if you're at a rally and you see that it is being led by people, by, well, let's say, by black people who want to keep a certain tone to the march, then you are not helping them, and you are acting on the other side if you go start smashing windows when they are calling for peace and for prayer. No one says you got to pray to a God that you don't believe in, but it is very disrespectful to disrupt that when it's happening. And if black people decide that that's the way they want to handle this desperate effort to stop the genocide of their own people, to stop the genocide of black men, then that must be respected. And I am speaking to my fellow white agitators. If you can't have that much respect, then at least step away and do your own thing somewhere else. And don't let the media smear violence with black people if that's not what they want. Time is 9:58. Stay tuned, because coming up on KBOO Portland, you will have Eric Cascadia. And we're going out to you via the terrestrial transmitter. I urge you to get your own non-digital radio and enjoy the cheapness of it. Enjoy batteries that last all year. It's very easy to do. Just cast about, and I'm sure you can pull it off. And on the World Wide Web, meanwhile, glad to be going out to so many people, and in that way to all the ships at sea.
Yes, good morning. You are listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. It's a minute before 10 o'clock. Coming up in 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints. Workers protest the hedge fund buyout of American Apparel in Los Angeles. The Flashpoints multi-part series, The Battle for Public Education in the 21st Century, continues, and more on rising opposition to testing in the U.S. public schools. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with Viet Thanh Nguyen about Sympathizer, his spy novel examining the legacy of Vietnam. And later in the hour, we'll hear a little poetry and a look at the new film Jimmy's Hall, about political activist Jimmy Gralton, who was deported from Ireland during the country's Red Scare of the 1930s. But first, it is Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary coming up next. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Hi, this is Sun Lee, KBOO's Membership Director. I want to thank you for being a member and a listener to KBOO. I also wanted to share this listener's comment on why they support KBOO.
KBOO is part of what makes Portland awesome. Sherry from Portland, Oregon.
We hope that you feel the same. Please support your community and your local radio station by going to kboo.fm/give.